This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It looks like the gloves are already off in the political fight over redistricting in North Carolina. The GOP has changed some of the rules in an effort to protect any map they may draw. A small item in the recently passed budget package allows the legislature to submit a redistricting plan to the district court in D.C., Washington, D.C., instead of the Justice Department, and it would let the legislature take the state's attorney off the case. The GOP strategy is not illegal. In fact, it's been attempted by political parties in other states as the battle for congressional redistricting heats up. Today, we'll take a look at how the 2012 election is shaping up and why North Carolina is again an important battleground state. David Wasserman is house editor of the Cook Political Report, an independent, nonpartisan online newspaper that offers election analysis. David's also the author of Better Know a District, a publication just out from Cook Political Report. He joins us now from his office in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the State of Things, David.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about North Carolina and why it is so important this year.
Well, North Carolina, besides being a huge battleground for 2012, is Republicans' best opportunity to pick up seats in the House through redistricting. That's the case for three reasons. First of all, it was Democrats who drew a very gerrymandered map in 2001 to maximize their opportunity to get seats in the congressional delegation in North Carolina. Number two, Republicans took over the legislature, obviously, in 2010, but the governor does not have a veto power over the process, and Governor Perdue, as much as she'd like to stand in the way of Republican plans to draw the map in their favor, doesn't have authority in part because Democrats shot themselves in the foot a long time ago by passing legislation that essentially assumed that Democrats were always going to have control of the legislature, and there might be a Republican governor from time to time standing in their way. Instead, it's the other way around, and so the best laid plans of mice and men. And then third of all, a number of Democrats survived the wave of 2010 in the congressional delegation, and so there are plenty of juicy targets left for Republicans to go after to pick up seats in North Carolina. So those three factors converge to make North Carolina Republicans' best opportunity to pick up as many as three or four seats from where they are in the minority in the congressional delegation right now.
So three or four more seats possible for the Republican Party. As you suggest, the Democrats were in power. They certainly fixed the map to make things to maximize their possibilities. Now they're out of power and having to reap some of the whirlwinds, some of the seeds that they sowed. Tell us about this change, though, in that found its way actually into the budget package, and explain exactly what it does. Go ahead.
Well, I think this is largely a diversion. This is not a secret part of Republican strategy. This is what Republicans have been thinking that they've had to do for quite some time, because their biggest fear has been that career attorneys at the Department of Justice, who have the authority to pre-clear these maps and reject maps if they find discriminatory intent or effect, that they would block any changes that they made so as to be unfavorable to Democrats. So far, in the initial rulings that the Justice Department has made in Louisiana and Virginia, it doesn't appear as if they're really standing in the way of changes Republicans are making to maps. And so Republican fears might be a little bit misplaced. If they do choose to go to the circuit court route to do an end run around the Obama Justice Department to approve these maps, then they might end up spending more money and end up dragging themselves into a costly court fight that might be unnecessary. The chief concern in the North Carolina map is that two minority-majority districts be protected so as to avoid something called retrogression, or fewer opportunities for minority candidates to be elected. Currently, there's the 1st District, which sprawls across the rural eastern portion of the state, and there's the 12th District, which snakes from Charlotte all the way through Winston-Salem to Greensboro. Both of those districts elect African-American members of Congress, and Republicans have an interest in preserving them because they prevent Democratic voters from finding their way into other districts.
Have there been many, you know, in the course and course, this is all part of the Voting Rights Act, and this is why it would have to go to anybody for pre-clearance at the federal level. What's been the history since the Voting Rights Act, particularly in North Carolina, of plans making their way through? We see these gerrymandered maps, so somehow that's never been illegal. Have any of the plans been rejected, and to what extent do they get redrawn as a result of federal oversight?
Well, North Carolina is kind of ground zero for the history of litigation on Voting Rights Act districts. And the 12th district back in the 1990s was the most litigated district in the country. It produced such a strong reaction from the Supreme Court that the Supreme Court essentially said, let's not go to all costs to gerrymander districts just for the sake of including a majority of minority citizens, in this case African Americans. And so the district's lines were regularized a little bit so that it was wider than simply the median strip of I-85 extending from Charlotte to all the way. At one point, it extended all the way to Durham. In this iteration of the map, I expect pretty much the status quo as far as that district, and I expect the Justice Department to actually be okay with that map. The real controversy in the map may be in the eastern portion of the state, because the first district, which is a plurality African-American district, a very poor rural district represented by G.K. Butterfield, is underpopulated by close to 100,000 residents. So it needs to pick up more voters, and Republicans are likely to pack it with more urban African-American residents in the triangle. So there is likely to be an appendage to that district into both Raleigh and Durham to pick up more African-Americans to bring it up to population and maintain a majority minority status. Of course, what that does in the process is it would rob, conveniently for Republicans, it would rob Brad Miller's district and Renee Elmer's district of African-American voters so as to make both those districts more Republican. And so it's a win-win situation for Republicans, and it's a way that they can comply also with the Voting Rights Act in the process.
And you have created a kind of a state-by-state redistricting scorecard. Can you give us an idea about how North Carolina scores?
Well, I score North Carolina right now as a gain of 2.5 to 3 seats for Republicans. I say that because there are two very easy targets in the map for Republicans. I would be shocked if either Congressman Larry Kissel or Congressman Brad Miller had viable seats to run in come 2012 after Republicans redistrict. I think they are very, very easy targets to take out in the new map. I would also expect Republicans to make life a little bit harder for both Mike McIntyre in southeastern North Carolina and Heath Shuler in western North Carolina. And it's really a matter of how aggressive are Republicans willing to be. Sure, they'll undo the Democratic gerrymander that created winnable seats for Kissel and Brad Miller, but are they willing to go even farther and try and cut their advantage really thin across as many as 10 districts in the state? What I've heard is that Republicans are looking at trying to pack Democrats into just 4 districts. That would be both the 1st and the 12th districts, which are majority African-American. David Price's district might combine Brad Miller and David Price in one district in the triangle, and I'm calling that a majority PhD district, even though that's kind of a joke. Then I expect what Republicans are calling a majority minority district running along the southern border of the state from Wilmington to perhaps as far as Charlotte. And that would be a combination district of African-Americans, Lumbee Indians, and Hispanics forming a majority-minority district that Mike McIntyre would find himself a resident in. That would kind of be the conservative bet for Republicans, as well as shoring up Congresswoman Renee Elmer as a freshman. But if they want to go further than that, they could aim for as many as 10 seats.
We hear about this, of course, every 10 years. We've come to expect it. We may be becoming cynical about gerrymandering in the country. And yet we're still hearing more about nonpartisan independent commissions like the one in California that seems to be doing pretty well by some measures. Can you rate California's system and whether or not this kind of this idea of independent commissions would catch on?
Well, it's an idea that I think a lot of voters might embrace, given their reaction to the kind of industrial strength, no holds barred gerrymandering that you see from state to state in places like North Carolina, where districts look more like abstract works of art than actual shapes. And in California, this is really quite an earthquake, because as many as 15 incumbents could find themselves without jobs come 2012, just thanks to the map. The California Commission is comprised of citizens who are drawn by lottery in part and then selected by the state Board of Auditors. And they really are not beholden to any political figures. There are other commissions that call themselves bipartisan or nonpartisan that are really appointed by party leaders and state legislatures, so that there is some removal from the state legislature. But California's really is a unique process, an experiment that could throw out a number of incumbents, thanks to it being an incumbent blind process. But the prospects for other states replicating California's success in establishing a redistricting commission, I think it's a very limited opportunity, because California was able to put ballot amendments directly on voters' ballots. Other states don't have the kind of direct democracy that California does. So it's very difficult when legislators are loath to cede the power that they have to a group of people who may not have their best interests at heart.
Particularly when the last time the other guys were in power, they did it to you. Hard to imagine they're not going to do it. David, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
David Wasserman, House Editor of the Cook Political Report, an independent nonpartisan online newsletter. Coming up on The State of Things, how food won the Civil War. You'll hear that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us.